This is a sermon about discipleship. This is not a sermon about stewardship. There is a sermon about stewardship that's coming. This isn't it. This is a sermon about discipleship. Jesus brings us to a T-junction. You can go that way or that way, but you can't go that way. Let's hear again those words. No one can serve two masters. You will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Jesus spoke more about money than he did about prayer, fasting, human sexuality, the church, heaven, forgiveness of sins, or evangelism. Why was it he spoke so much about this one particular topic? It's because he knew that money has the power to destroy lives and to destroy discipleship. Now, as you may know, Jesus didn't actually talk specifically using the word money. He actually used the word mammon, which was a small false god, someone who would be worshipped. And mammon is worshipped today as well. I want to suggest this morning that there is an unholy trinity. An unholy trinity that splits up mammon. He is the money, the market, and the holy stuff. Money seems to be everywhere, apart from in my wallet. It's one of the great blessings of having children that no matter how often I go to the cash point, I still have so little money in my pocket. Money makes disciples of people at an early age. I can remember growing up, I had an uncle who would say, if anyone started talking about money, you'd say, "Oh, it's serious now, we're talking about money." And as a child, my ears would prick up, "Oh, this is serious because we're talking about money." And then I had members of my family who, when they spoke about money, would whisper. You know these people, don't you? You say, as a precocious child, I'd say, "Oh, how much did the car cost? Or how much did your new kitchen cost?" And they go, "Oh, no, tell you, you can't talk about money. Shh. It's like Voldemort in Harry Potter. Oh, you can't speak about that," they'd say. And if they did say a figure, they would mouth it rather than say it. "So how much?" "He's so holy. This unholy trinity, money's so holy. Dare not speak his name, because terrible things happen if we talk his name." The first person of this unholy trinity is money. And I've known people say this about church, that we shouldn't say about money in church. Well, it's not true. We talk about God. Well, that's fine. He is holy. But then when it talks about money, should we talk about money? Money gets away with an awful lot because he's persuaded us that we shouldn't talk about it. He's continually in the news. He has his own television and radio programs, doesn't he? There's money everywhere. He even has his own daily newspaper to tell you how he's getting on. He has his high priests. He has his economists and bankers and people who work in the money industry. And he tells us what we should do with him. We should save him. We should put him away. We should put him in certain places where it's better than others. And if you're not being wise about your money, then oh dear, you are not wise at all. The unholy trinity. Now, the second person of the unholy trinity. Let's go to the market. The market is money incarnate. He is everywhere, the market. He is strange because he has emotions. Have you ever noticed that the market has emotions? Because he doesn't have, yes, he does. I'm not the only person who turns on the radio in the morning or the television. And whilst I'm getting dressed, I'm told by the news programs how the market is feeling. Because I need to know this. It's important. I have no idea what it is. But you'll hear things like this in the breakfast news. Do you remember, you'll turn on the telly and you'll hear, the market is up, the market is down, the market is depressed, the market is sliding, buoyant, angry, confused, quiet, excited, anxious. How's the market feeling? I bet you know already today how some markets are feeling round the world. All before we brushed our teeth. We know how the market is. And then when big events happen, when there's big political events in the world, well, we have to know how the market responds, don't we? Brexit, put the telly on. How's the market feeling about it? New Prime Minister, put the telly on. How's the market feeling about it? I need to know the market, because if he's not happy, terrible things are going to happen. I have no idea about the markets, don't know how they work, don't know what they do. But somehow, they have this emotion, this second person of the Trinity. And it's even worse than that. I was born in the beginning of the 1970s, so I sort of came to adulthood in the 1980s. And I was told it was a mantra that we had to let the market decide. Have you all heard that? The market decides about healthcare, about education, about buildings, about international aid. The market decides everything. I'm so blessed that the market is so intelligent to be able to understand where to build a school or where to put shopping centres. Aren't we blessed that we have the market? The first person is the money of this unholy Trinity. The second is the market, the one who has these emotions. And the third person of the unholy Trinity is the holy stuff. The holy stuff. There is stuff everywhere. Buy more, feel better. We all know that's the truth, don't we? Buy more, feel better. It is everywhere. A few years ago, I was thrilled to see it was a Volvo V40 advert. Does anyone have a Volvo V40? No, everyone's going, no, we haven't got one. It was a brilliant, brilliant advert. It had this phrase in it, which I utterly love. It says, "The ultimate feeling of completeness." Imagine that. You can buy a Volvo V40 and have the ultimate feeling of completeness. Isn't that amazing? Do you know, I've not met the driver of a Volvo V40 yet, and when I do, they're going to be amazing people. They're just complete in every way. Isn't that going to be fantastic? Buy more, feel better. It's not true, but it's a line that is peddled every single day. And I don't know why, but I seem to fall for it with enthusiasm. Buy more houses, buy more cars, buy more clothes, handbags, shoes, buy more shampoo. Because you're worth it. buy is what we say. Could you imagine? Here's my stuff. Can you imagine me saying to my grandfather, he was one of seven, born in Bridge North, he used to love telling me stories of the poverty of his childhood, that his great grandchildren would have so much stuff that we can't find places to store it. I remember as my children were growing up, I've got two daughters. And when we used to have the parties, you know, when they're sort of 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, many of you are in that position now, that they would all come, they'd all get pink plastic toys. It was always pink and always plastic. At the end of these parties, we just had this pile of pink plastic stuff. And I used to weep. What are we going to do with it all? We've still got last year's. And the kids had so much they couldn't get into it to actually play this. Where was that thing? Somewhere in the pink plastic pile. Don't go near it. Just put it straight in the loft. So the money, the unholy Trinity, the money, the market, and the holy stuff. So why is it that Jesus brings us to this T-junction? As we heard just a few moments ago, you can either serve God or mammon or not. It's one way or the other. You can either serve God or serve mammon. You can't go a third way. Why is it that he is so careful to warn us repeatedly not to serve mammon? Well, I believe it's simple. Because mammon is a liar. He lies to you. He lies to your wife and your husband and your children and your grandchildren. Mammon lies, and he's been lying through history. And Jesus knew it. And I want to share that with us this morning. Don't believe me? Mammon is a liar because he promises security, but he brings anxiety. A few years ago, I saw a program about a lottery winner. He'd won a fortune and everyone knew it. And he was so anxious that he was going to be burgled in the evening. He employed a security guard to sit at his kitchen table every night. So he went to bed and left the security guard there. He was so terrified that his children were going to be kidnapped that they used to have a security guard take them to school. He didn't have security. He had anxiety. I know quite a few wealthy people. I'm not one of them. But when I've met wealthy people, sometimes they are the most uptight and anxious about the cost of their house or their portfolios. The only portfolio I've got is a folder. And then, you know, they're all worried about it, the anxiety that it can engender. Number one, he offers us security, but he brings anxiety. He's a liar. He's a liar because he promises popularity, but he brings relational pain. When the pop star Prince died, he had 24 of his close family relatives, 24, who claimed that they should have the entirety of his inheritance. You can only imagine them all squabbling in court over his money. It seems to me that those with plenty of money often seem to make very difficult decisions. I love reading Hello magazine or OK magazine. I'm not alone in that, am I? Yes, I am. This is great. I don't buy it, obviously. I don't dare buy the magazines. But I love going to the dentist or the doctors. I get to see a chiropractor every now and then. I always read her copy of Hello magazine. The last time I was there, I was reading it, and there was a fairly well-known celebrity who had had so many facelifts, A, I hardly recognised her, and B, I didn't think she could have any emotions across her face because it was so pulled tight by all the work that she had done. Had it made her popular? I doubt it. But somehow Mammon says he'll make us popular. He's a liar. And thirdly, Mammon says that he will bring salvation, but he doesn't bring salvation. I wonder how many funerals have taken place right here. This is when we have a funeral. This is where the coffin is brought in. Thousands of funerals, I suspect, have taken place over the hundreds of years that this church has been here, right here. And those funerals have been totally different. Some have been people who have died tragically, young lives taken in the height of life. Some would have been people who had a lot of resource. Some would have been people who were very poor. Some would have been people who were very old, who had lived a full and wonderful life. They had so many differences, but they had one thing in common. The people who have all had their services here, they took nothing with them. They took nothing with them. Scripture says we come into the world with nothing and we take nothing with us. That is the one absolute cast iron guarantee. Jesus died with nothing. His murderers gamble and take his clothes. When he comes to the cross, he has nothing. When it comes to death, we all have nothing. Let me ask you, if everything that we own now is going to be left to someone else, do we ever really own it? Mammon lies. What can we do as God's people to make sure that this lie doesn't infect our lives? Well, I've got three things that I want to suggest to you. The first is to give. Now remember, this isn't a stewardship sermon. I'm not talking about giving to the church today, but I am talking about giving. The one thing that we can do that Mammon hates more than anything is to give. Because it says, we control you, money, you don't control us. We will give you away. We will share you with an aching world. It really scares Mammon when he knows he no longer controls you. It is so countercultural to give. Jesus says there is enough. Mammon says you never have enough. He's lying. You do have enough. How many of us have gone through life and have looked back, and if we could have gone back in time, we could have whispered into our ears, don't worry, you'll have enough. Jesus says, do that as you go forward in time. He whispers to us, don't worry, you'll have enough. It brings us to have control over money. Mammon says that he wants to control us. The second thing that I want to suggest this morning that we can do is show and tell. There's teachers in here, aren't there, this morning? Or certainly want training to be a teacher. There's some people who are in teaching. Stand up. Yes, then. Show and tell is a great thing to do. Show and tell your children and your grandchildren how you can overcome mammon by giving. Set the culture in your house and say, we give in this house. Mammon will not control us. We will share with a world that has so much need. Speak about it to your children. Show them what you do. As for many years, Dawn and I have sponsored a child. And we started this when our elder daughter was very young, so that she could know the stories of someone living in a very different culture, but also to know that we had a connection with this child and we were going to sponsor them and support them in a small way financially as they grew up. And we used to have their pictures, and we still have their pictures on our fridge. Show and tell. And then finally, let's be ruthless. I let you into a secret, I'm greedy. I suspect I'm not the only person who fantasizes what they would do when they win the quadruple, triple, double rollover for the lottery. Am I the only person who's that? There was one this week, wasn't there? And it caught me daydreaming. They said, oh, the estimated jackpot is 7,100 trillion billion pounds. Whatever it was, I don't know. And the ridiculous thing is, I never buy a lottery ticket, and I hate the lottery. I've got no chance of winning the lottery, but I still daydream of what I would do if I did. Somehow mammon gets in, doesn't he? He starts to whisper to you, don't have enough, be worried, look at what you're doing, look at what you've got, look at what you haven't got, look at what your neighbour's driving. Is it as nice as what you're driving? All of those questions. The great Keith Tonda used to say, we never look at the person who's on the rung below us. We usually look at the rung above and we feel dissatisfied. Mammon eats his way in. Be ruthless. Be ruthless and keep short accounts. When you know that mammon is eating into your soul, confess to God. Come to him and say, Lord, I trust in you. I trust in you. And drive out this liar from our lives. I think mammon's everywhere. I think that unholy trinity casts a shadow over most of our lives. Certainly has with me. But God is a gracious God. And he knows we can turn away from mammon time and again. And he's there to meet us. Let me finish with those words from Jesus. Jesus said to his disciples, he says to us today, no one can serve two masters. You will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. True friend. Lord Jesus, we thank you for this truth, that you meet us where mammon is and you will defeat it. Help us to follow you, to know your love, to follow you always, to push away the unholy trinity, and to seek you first and foremost. Bless us when we're wrong. Help us when we go astray. Receive our confession. Take us forward. Help us to know your reassuring whisper. But there's always enough. Amen.